Hi, I'm Mike Yaman on the latest edition of the Pac-12 Network's football podcast. We take you inside our touchdown room. That's where we watch all the games on Saturdays and tell you what it was really like to see Rick watch his son Jerry Neuheisel beat Texas. Find out why defense will be the key between Cal and Arizona when they square off on the Pac-12 Networks. And yes, I said defense. And a gridiron lullaby that explains Rick's personality perfectly. You don't want to miss this show.
This is Pac-12 football.
The quick slant is picked off. It's Demaryius Randall, and he will take it to the house for an Arizona State touchdown.
And they give it to the linebacker, Jack, and he gets another first down. And here he goes, Miles Jack. How about that?
Heisman hopefuls.
Mariota with time over the middle. Touchdown!
Here goes Hundley, looking for another block. He's not going to need it. That is an 86-yard touchdown run.
The Conference of Champions brings you the Pac-12 Network's football podcast. Here are your hosts, Mike Yam and Rick Neuheisel.
Another week of college football in the books as we stare down week number 4. And what a weekend it was. Rick Neuheisel, Mike Yam with you. The smile, still ear to ear on one Rick Neuheisel. The glow from a weekend, a special weekend, is still apparent. I want to let you know, because you're only here on Tuesdays and Saturdays because of our football coverage, Football Weekly, Tuesday nights, 7 p.m. Pacific, multiple rears. I will handle that. And, of course, everything that we do on Saturdays. But I will tell you this, Rick, and for those who have been under a rock, Jerry Neuheisel had an opportunity, great opportunity, made the most of it on the road against Texas, the game-winning touchdown, 3 minutes to play, 33-yarder. We will be dissecting a little pump fake down the sideline. Rick Neuheisel goes crazy. Everyone loves it in our touchdown room. It was great. But on Monday, here's the point. Monday, I get into the office, and I think I'd even texted you. It was so weird. Sunday, I woke up Sunday morning, and I'm thinking to myself, man, like, that was such a great night. And I'm thinking about what it was like in the touchdown room and watching you watch Jerry play on TV. And then on Monday, I get into the office. I must have had 15 people come up to me here at our network studios and say, hey, how was it? What was it like? That was really cool. I watched the post-game show. We joke around all the time, you know, the flagship joke,
yes,
the whole deal.
Yes, we do.
But I will say this, there was every person in this building could not have been more thrilled for you and obviously Jerry and the rest of the Neuheisel clan. So
we appreciate, my wife and I certainly appreciate all the well wishers. I've never had that many texts and emails in my life. It was exciting. And I think it's Americana. You know, this kid gets a chance to go in to play on a major stage like a game between UCLA and Texas, and in Jerry's world, no less, and you know, finds a way to come through at the end. I mean, it was storybook stuff. And as a dad, you're just like, holy cow, did that just happen?
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. And I'm so proud and happy for him. And that's like, you know, it gives me perspective. You know, I've been a parent for a long time now. Jerry's 22 years old. But how many parents have had this experience before? You know, to watch their son or daughter, whether it's Little League or Pop Warner or college football, a piano recital, doesn't matter. When your child has put in the effort, committed to an endeavor, and now gets a chance to have that opportunity, you live and die with them. And it just is really, really cool.
You know, we played the video on the post-game show of Saturday night of you in our touchdown room. Do you have any idea? I was just given these numbers. Do you have any idea how many views the video
No idea.
Had? So on pac-12.com, there were over 100,000 views in the 48 hours following the weekend. There were 80,000 plays of the touchdown room reaction. So I guess 100,000 views for everything. And then 20,000 views of the interview with Jerry on the post-game show online. How cool is that?
That's cool.
That is definitely.
Usually you handle all the interviews. Yeah, I had to have my own son in the deal to actually get a seat at the stage.
It was funny because they were lining us up, telling us, hey, Jerry, we're going to be able to get Jerry. And I said, okay, Jim, I'll set it up. I'll ask the first question. But I said, Rick's here. just let them go. I mean, because no one gives a damn what I have to say. They want to hear what you and that interaction, see that interaction.
Mrs. Yam back in Baltimore cares deeply.
Who, by the way, said congratulations. I was just talking with her this morning. And she said,
fabulous.
Please tell
what a great lady.
The new Heisels. Yes, my
what
mom is.
What happened to you?
I wonder. I have those same thoughts all the time. But look, and you know this as a coach and as a guy that has been given opportunities as well. Sometimes the opportunities come at a cost here, and at least from the UCLA perspective, we don't know sort of what's going to happen. But
keep
before,
our fingers crossed.
Yeah, for Brett Hundley, who goes down with the elbow injury. Luckily for UCLA as well, they have a bye, so they have some time to figure this out. But there's one story, and if you don't know the story, I just want you to say, because Brett and you recruited Brett, and we say this all the time, and I know you're probably tired of me saying this, but other people have brought it up and said, hey, why didn't Rick play Brett? Well, Brett was hurt, and I know you're tired of telling the story, but at the same time, you're invested as a coach going and getting all of these players, recruiting
right.
these guys.
They become children of yours in some way as well. There's no question.
On the post-game show, look, everything is unfolding in our touchdown room, and that's what we call the area in the room that we watch the games on Saturdays, and Sue, your wife, calls you and is telling you this story about Brett's dad.
She says, you're not going to believe what's happening here. I said, I know Jerry's in the game. Just keep your fingers crossed. He's ready for this opportunity. She says, no. Brett Hundley Sr., who I've become very close with over the years, because obviously, as you just mentioned, I recruited him. So when you recruit a kid, you go into the home, you get to know the parents. That's all part of the pitch. And he had just come back from the locker room where the doctors informed Brett that he's not going to play anymore tonight. Hopefully he'll be ready to go by the next time they play. But he just found out that Brett's not going back in, and he comes back to the stands and gets the entire UCLA cheering section. And, you know, they give blocks of tickets.
Oh, yeah.
So UCLA fans are all sitting with one another, gets them all on their feet, and begins to chant, Jerry, Jerry. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that makes this game so special. It you know, these families that travel with each other. I mean, for those who are listening who've got little leaguers or Pop Warner, and you know how close you get with those other parents who travel each week, and who's got the popsicles this week, and who's going to bring the juice boxes the next week. And that's basically what's going on with 18 to 22-year-olds. And for one quarterback's dad to get up and start rooting for the other quarterback, that transcends, you know, who makes it to the Final Four. It's more important. And to me, that's a great reminder of why this game is so special and why we need to take such good care of it.
Two quick things before we move on to talk about the weekend and what's still to come. One, we went out after the show and your phone was non-stop while the game is going on. You joke about me being on my phone all the time, and I am. I've never seen anything like this. Inundated your phone every 2 seconds.
It looked like a Mexican jumping bean. It was sitting on the it just kind of kept rattling on the table.
Can I say, there was a ton of notable people. You can go through the list. Can I? And I'm just going to use the one name.
Sure.
Can I tell the story about Sean?
Sure.
I thought that was the cool. We were out after the show. And you're showing me, and I was like, oh, who texted you? And it's the Troy Aikmans, Fred Couples. It's a list of who's who. And there was one, and I'm not going to forget this. There was one text message, and you showed it to me. And I thought, and we've had opportunities to speak with him. He was on your show, Under Center.
Right.
One of the nicest kids in the conference. And he went from one of the nicest to maybe my favorite now in the Pac-12. Maybe he surpassed D.D. Goodson. And it is hard to do that. But Sean Mannion, the quarterback at Oregon State, I thought it was the classiest, nicest thing I'd ever seen from a student athlete. He sends you a text and says, hey, I don't have Jerry's number. Can you say congratulations to me? I thought that was the coolest thing.
Yeah.
And it gets back into that college-type atmosphere. It's collegiate.
You know, they got to meet each other. Jerry came over to the house when Sean was there to do the Under Center show and struck up a friendship. And you know, it's we look at the kids and they're wearing their uniforms and they're wearing their helmets, and we kind of think of them as these gladiators and so forth. And in some ways they are, but they're kids and they have these unique relationships and they bring a lot of joy to the folks who can't wait to get up on Saturdays and watch ball games. And it's a great reminder why this game is so special, and it's also keeps us all in check about the importance of it.
Yeah, and the only other story that I want to throw out there, Sunday, Ashley Adamson, one of our friends and colleagues, Ash, her fiancé, and one of my buddies from high school is with me, and we go to Off the Grid in San Francisco. I don't know if I've ever brought this up to you. So Off the Grid is like this huge park. They do it in the Presidio. Okay. On Sundays, and it's a huge park. It's right by the water. You can see the Golden Gate Bridge. One of my favorite things to do in San Francisco. Got food trucks all over the place, and everyone's really family-like atmosphere. The kids are there. They got a DJ, the whole deal. We sit down, and I hadn't seen Ash was working the sidelines for us on the Stanford game, and I said, how
By the
was
way,
it?
Is she an employee at Stanford yet?
I mean, it's they love
there
her there.
Every weekend.
They love Ashley at Stanford. And she had a good weekend. Obviously, she got to work our game and the Fighting Ashley Adamsons, as I affectionately call Boston College, because that's where she went with the huge win. We'll
she
talk
kept
about that.
She that very low key.
She
though.
Did not. Yeah, she, I don't know how thrilled she was that I brought that up after they handled USC. But she said, I said, how was the Stanford game? She goes, it was good, but I don't really care right now. What was it like in the touchdown room? And I said this to her. I go, look, you Ash, we did the launch night show. You were here for launch night.
Right.
I said, if I got fired, God forbid, and I'm knocking on wood and whatever, if I got fired today and someone said, hey, what do you remember about Pac-12 networks? If they said, if you had to go back over the last 2+ years now, I'd say two things that I'll never forget. One, launch night. And not just being a part of it. Part of the show is a blur. I don't remember all the things. I remember what it was like right before we went on air. Where, like, just your heart's racing. I mean,
right.
It was, and I didn't feel it felt weird because I don't usually get nervous before shows, and I didn't, but like, you got the count, and it was like 15, 4, and I'm like, oh boy, and I could feel it coming out of my chest. But, you know, I remember that feeling, but I remember being in the touchdown room, and I always tell people about launch night, and you and Sue had a bottle of champagne. It was Dom Perignon. I had never had that type of champagne before.
Take a horn off.
And that's exactly. And you gave a great speech. I don't know if you remember this, but you talked about how
team. When
you were coaching, you and your assistants, wins are hard to come by was the theme. And they're hard to come by. And
have to celebrate.
Exactly. And then we all took a swig. I mean, the Ronnie Lotts, the Summer Sanders, everyone who was here on launch night. That I'll never forget. That is one of the best moments of my career. And then I'll say this, because of the 2+ years that we've had working together, people don't understand this. We joke around all the time. Curtis is with us on the training camp tour. We called him the babysitter and the whole deal. But people don't realize that myself, you, Ashley Adamson, Curtis, this really has become, and I said this on the postgame show, a real family in a lot of sense. We hang out all the time. We're friends. It's not, and I haven't had this on a professional level. So to be involved and watching this unfold, like Jerry I've met a few times, Joe, your youngest son, I probably know of your sons the best because I've seen him, you know, the most and spent more time with him than the others. And Sue, obviously, who comes up here on Saturdays, although she hasn't been up here, and I've been disappointed by that because I'd rather hang out with her than you. But the point is, you know, you're in everyone's lives. You know what's going on. You know about you've met my family members and the whole deal. So it was one of the coolest things. And to see you, because you're normally animated when we're watching the games.
The game ratcheted up a little bit.
It just changed a little bit more, and the intensity, and you were pacing up and down the room. You didn't sit. It just was. It was one of it,
coaching every snap.
And I did an imitation of you to
coaching
Ashley.
Coaching every snap.
Come on, boy. It was one of those. And when I said it, Ashley was like, "That was pretty good." But I've heard that before.
Right.
But I hadn't heard it with that zest. And it was one of the coolest things that I've had here at the Pac-12 Network. So, again, congratulations.
Thank you so much. I got one text from my old coach.
Yeah.
Terry Donahue.
Yeah.
And it said, I thought I was in a time machine. It's just a reminder how fast life goes by. You know, it wasn't so long ago I was that kid that wasn't supposed to get in and got in and had some good things happen. And I'm just thrilled for my boy, but it's that circle of life. We just keep going, and pretty soon there'll be some little yammers that we'll be rooting for.
It'll be a while.
They'll be flip cupping their tails off.
I think it'll be a while. You know my situation. But with all that said, there is some preparation now for UCLA. They have the bye-in. It's kind of a weird week for the Pac-12 because we call this the conference of quarterbacks, and Taylor Kelly goes down. Todd Graham has said, and they have a bye this week, as does UCLA. They'll play each other in week number 5. But these two guys now don't really want to talk about their quarterbacks and injuries. Take me through what Todd Graham and Jim Moore are doing.
It's a poker game right now. You know, everything's about advantages. You're always looking for an edge. And when you're preparing for a football team, you have a notion of who they are. You've got all the film and so forth. Well, Arizona State without Taylor Kelly is a different team than they are with him. Mike Bercovici, who's a fine player from the Valley, went to Taft High School. I knew all about Mike. He and Jerry are the same age. They are a different team. Mike is not the same athlete that Taylor Kelly is. His role in the running game will be different, which is the exact mirror image if Jerry Neuheisel has to start for UCLA. Jerry Neuheisel is not the same athlete that Brett Hundley is. He has his strengths in other areas, but not the same guy. So if you don't tell Arizona State that Brett Hundley's not playing, or you don't tell UCLA that Taylor Kelly's not playing, you don't necessarily get a defensive plan that's geared to just stop a guy that's not as athletic as the other. And so there's going to be a big-time cat-and-mouse game. The practices, I guarantee you, will be closed. It'll be harder to get into those practices in anticipation of the game. There'll be, you know, rumor and innuendo as to about whether the guys will talk, but everybody will be off limits to the media. You know, I don't think they'll let anybody talk with respect to about that issue. They'll be instructed carefully not to say anything. Other teammates, you talk about yourself. You're an expert on yourself. You don't talk about what else is going on. And unless everybody's going to do it the same way, that's the appropriate way to handle the situation.
A week ago on the podcast, the phrase, and I think you threw it out there, the South is rising. And it was appropriate because the Pac-12 South, Arizona State, will scare you. USC's coming off a win against Stanford. Utah is sitting at 2-0. Arizona all of a sudden seems like they have a guy in Anu Salman. Nick Wilson has come on strong. We've now seen that through 3 weeks. UCLA is UCLA. And now all of a sudden USC goes across the country. They lose to Boston College. We just talked about those two injuries. Utah's got a huge matchup with Michigan this week. Trez Anderson on Pac-12 Football Weekly, 7 p.m. Pacific, Tuesday nights, multiple re-airs. And Arizona now has one of the marquee matchups, which we'll be able to catch here on the Pac-12
Network. I'm
really
looking forward to that.
That's
going to
be
Cal game. That's going to be a great football game.
But what do we make now of the South based off of, and I want to talk more specifically about USC.
I think the South is still a terrific conference. It gets a little bit of a black eye, terrific division within the Pac-12 conference. It gets a little bit of a black eye with the loss at Boston College, which we can talk about here in just a second, and also with the injuries to Hundley and Kelly, because those two guys are bona fide big timers. And for them not to be in, we hope that both will be back here as quickly as is possible. The loss at Boston College, I'm never one to give excuses for losing, but that was as hard a challenge as you can imagine for a team to go on the road. Following an emotional victory over Stanford, one that you had to invest everything in, we know that Stanford are the bullies of the Pac-12. They're going to be the most physical team, and it takes a physical toll on your team when that happens, right? You go then across the country to play a team coached by Steve Adazio, who's an old offensive line coach. Last year, they had a 2,000-yard rusher, to give you an idea how they're going to play football. This year, they got a Florida transfer, a kid by the name of Tyler Murphy, a quarterback, who's a running quarterback, who in that game
ran
13 carries for 191 yards. And you run from sideline to sideline in the game, forcing a depleted roster. They traveled like an NFL team, Mike. They were 53, 55 guys in pads that had scholarships. You make them run sideline to sideline with a gifted athlete like Murphy, and you wear them out. Especially when the game got to 17-6 USC, if you took a deep breath there and said, okay, we've got – oh, my goodness. And 450 yards later on the ground, it was and then count in the emotion. The emotion of the evening, the red bandana. If you haven't looked at the story of the young lacrosse player from Boston College, you need to do it. You can go on YouTube and check it out. This guy who went into the burning buildings on 911 and saved not one, not I mean, just kept going back for more and ended up losing his life in that heroic quest to get more people saved. And his parents are at the game, and they're waving the red bandanas to the faithful in Chestnut Hill. You're going to play your best. And it's just we have not seen the last of USC. Structurally and schematically and strategically, Steve Sarkisian has some real decisions to make. He has played an up-tempo style, and he has been prolific with it, both at Washington and in game one at USC. In the last two games, he's played ball control offenses, offenses that have pounded the ball and made him bleed defensively, especially given the attrition. Think about Leonard Williams. We knew he went into the Stanford game with a sprained ankle. He plays through the injury. He has 11 tackles. He doesn't hardly practice the next week. They get on a plane on Thursday, travel the entire country to get over there. And now he has to play in this game and play that many snaps. And when you look at the offense of USC and see that there were 7 3-and-outs, that is a killer for your defense when they're having to run sideline to sideline. And therein lies his issue. He's going to have to decide, can I afford to play this up-tempo style, feast or famine style of offense, even though I know I can run up big numbers because I've done it and I've got the talent and the athletes to do it here, or do I need to borrow a page from Ed Orgeron a year ago who pounded, run the ball, wasn't prolific numbers, but Cody Kessler was successful in that deal. Nelson Aguilar was a huge big play performer in that deal. Remember, Marquise Lee was kind of off and on in terms of injured, not injured during that course of that run during the Ed O time last year with the Trojans. Do I need to go and incorporate some of that? I still have Buck Allen. I hopefully get Trey Madden back. I can do that, and I can save my defense. That is a huge, huge strategic question for Steve Sarkisian to answer.
Well, he's got a few days because they have the bye, and then they match up with Oregon State. But when you look at some of the, and I mentioned this before, 5 ranked teams in the Pac-12, 4 are on byes. The only other team that's going to be playing is Oregon, and they have Washington State. Nick Aliotti, one of our colleagues, the former defensive coordinator for the Ducks, he'll be joining us here in just a couple moments' time. But maybe the one of the more significant games, I know you want to talk Cal and Arizona, we'll get to that, but Utah and Michigan, Drez Anderson, once again on Football Weekly, Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Pacific with multiple re-airs. Drez Anderson joined us, and he's an affable guy. He's got that personality.
His dad's son.
He is.
I played with his dad, Flipper.
Now, was Flipper in the same vein? There's going to be
Flipper is a youngster from New Jersey. His mother worked for the airline, so he could fly back and forth for nothing. Flipper was one of the funniest guys I've ever been around. He was a freshman when I was a senior. He ran with another guy by the name of Paco Craig, who was a freshman receiver at the same time. And these two kids, I mean, they were wet behind the ears. They were freshmen. They said, hey, new, when you going to hook us up at the fraternity party? So I take these two guys to my fraternity, and their eyes lit up with these beautiful sorority girls walking around. They thought they'd died and gone to heaven. So they had a blast. They've been pals of mine ever since. I got a text from Paco just the other day saying I was had 20 people at my house watching the game, and I'm going crazy like Jerry was my son. I said he is. He's the son of the program. That's exactly what it is. Flipper, I wanted to take Drez Anderson. Drez is from Riverside.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring him to UCLA, but I just didn't have enough scholarships to take the extra guy. And I just couldn't pull the trigger because I needed to get some big guys. I didn't have, you know, we were depleted in the trenches. And so Drez goes to Utah, and I'm so happy for him.
He's thrived.
And he is such the personality, as you and I both found out when we were there. And he's off to a great start again this year in the Dave Christensen offense. And I think the Dave Christensen offense, remember, this is an offense when he was the head coach at Wyoming that went to Lincoln, Nebraska, and put over 600 yards on the vaunted black shirt defense. This is an offense that's going there with some, you know, increased skill, you know, with the guys like Kalen Clay, Devontae Booker. Those guys have added speed to the equation. Kenneth Scott being healthy again, Travis Wilson being that much more experienced. I if they don't turn the ball over, I love Utah in this game.
Travis, no interceptions so far on the season, which is also part of the reason
and
why.
And Michigan has turned it over 7 times in the last 2 games.
Here, are you surprised by this? I mentioned this to Drez as I was getting ready for that interview. Michigan defensively leading the conference right now in terms of total defense. To me, that's I don't know why, but it surprised me when I was looking at the numbers, because the perception right now of Michigan is they're down. We saw what happened.
Greg Madison, their defense coordinator, is a really, really talented coach. He was with the Baltimore Ravens when Brady Hoke got the job, but he's an old son of Michigan, and he talked him into coming back, and he's got all sorts of goo on his hands. When we say goo, he's kind of like a guru. He's got lots of different ways to play, and he can hide players that are average and so forth. And they held Notre Dame despite getting beat by Notre Dame 31-0, they held Notre Dame under 300 yards of offense. So they're going to be ready for this, but if their offense has turned the ball over too often. And the other thing you have to understand about Michigan, they aren't like they used to be in the Bo Schembechler era. If you look at the last 6 years prior to this season, in 48 conference games, 8 games a season, they are 21-27 in conference play. Now, who would have ever thought that over a period of 6 years that Michigan would be that far under 500 in Big Ten play? Especially as we've all lamented about where the Big Ten is as a conference, at least when you compare it and stack it up against the others. So to me, this is definitely a game that has to be circled by the Utah faithful. It gives Kyle Whittingham a chance to make a mark again nationally and become relevant again, which they certainly have been there. But since they've joined the Pac-12, everybody thinks, well, they're just going through the growing pains of joining one of the elite conferences. They can expedite that trip with a win over a quality opponent like Michigan, especially on the road. And again, if you look at their track record while in the Pac-12, it's been the road that has been haunting them. They have to find a way to win on the road and play consistently on the road. And if they can go in there and get some offensive production to match what I think will be great defensive intensity, I love Utah in this game.
Yeah, Utah-Michigan may be the most significant game in the for a Pac-12 school. Maybe the most significant matchup, though, is the one that you're going to be able to watch on the Pac-12 networks. I'm just a fan of just
What did we just throw on there?
Oh, no, we've been using that. I usually just do it once a
Ring
show.
Ring my bell?
Yeah, do you like it? It's like instead of ringing the bell, we play that instead. So just a different look. It's a different look. Cal in Arizona.
What is in your iPad?
I mean, this is not my iPad.
iPod. What do you listen to?
This is that one. This is the Pac-12 Network's iPad that's playing all of this.
Yeah.
What's on my personal stuff? It's better. It's my music collection is
okay.
Good.
Okay.
It is definitely good.
Good.
Cal in Arizona, 7 p.m. Pacific on the Pac-12 Network.
Going to be an outstanding game.
I it's crazy because on Football Weekly today we're going to be. That was a weak one. I got the little jitters on the bell there. Cal and Arizona are two teams, and I think about both of these teams. I think about their head coaches in Sonny Dykes and Rich Rodriguez. I think about the personnel, the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, at least Nick Wilson in terms of the one running back that I certainly who's maybe gathered the most attention right now, going under the radar. He is not going under the radar at this point when you go for 170 in back-to-back weeks, but the point is, it's firepower, it's offense, and yet you and Nick Aliotti both said the same thing. Hey, this game is about who plays the best defense.
It really is. I think this is going to be a really fun game to watch. Cal is hugely improved from a year ago, not just the way they're playing, but the way they're carrying themselves. They've got some swagger. They've got some belief in their systems. Art Kaufman, their new defensive coordinator, has absolutely got them playing like they should play defensively. They look like they're in proper position. They're playing things on the proper shoulder. They're funneling to the help. They're using the sideline. It just looks like good football. It really does. Offensively, Jared Goff's got 20 extra pounds. Last year, he looked like an out-of-bounds steak. I mean, he is a really talented guy. This Luke Rebenzer, they've put him into the game, and he's kind of, a Johnny football throwback. He's going to go make plays and run around. And there's a lot of great chemistry right now for the Cal football program, and they're coming off a week off. They've had an extra week to kind of get ready for what Rich Rod and company do, which they're both play spreads, but Rich Rod features the run. Kadeem Carey obviously was a huge, huge weapon, and now Nick Wilson is off to a great start as a kind of a replacement for Kadeem's production. Anu Solomon in week 1 and 2 I thought was a concern. His completion percentage was not nearly what it should be in a spread offense where you're throwing the ball quickly out to the edges and trying to create running game in that way. They had 7 field goals in 2 games. It took 5 games last year before they even attempted their 7th field goal. So they weren't finishing drives. And in this last game against Nevada, the defense couldn't get off the field. Nevada played keep away, but Solomon really elevated his game, but for a really bad freshman mistake when he threw one up when he was under a duress. I think he was 14 of 16 at what time, ended up close to an 80% passer. Caleb Jones, the transfer from Texas, is huge. Blossoming as a huge player. We all know Austin Hill is on the rebound. We've got just so many weapons on that team outside that it really is going to be an exciting game. And yet when you look at Cal, you think of all the weapons also. You know, the Bryce Treggs, the
Lawler,
Chris Harper, Kenny Lawler. Yeah. I mean, it really is going to be a showcase of skill. It's going to be about field position. It's going to be about defense. And it's going to be about turnovers.
Who do you like in the game?
You know, I think Arizona has the edge because it's a home game. But I'm going to pick Cal. I'm going to pick Cal in the game just because I'm telling you there's magic and what's happening there. I may be completely off base. I may be thinking, but I'm not sure we know enough about Arizona's defense. And the one thing that Arizona's defense does not possess right now is a pass rush. Scooby Wright, to me, cannot be a consistent pass rusher. He's too important in the intermediate coverage deal. They have to find a pass rush, and until they do, I think Cal is a really dangerous offensive team.
Oregon and Washington State going head-to-head. Last year, this game was played, and it was the Ducks who prevailed. 62-38 was the final score. Our colleague, our friend, Nick Aliotti, had some choice words after that game.
Yes, he did.
Had some fun with it, but Nick—
Yes, he did.
But before we even talked about the game, the first thing I wanted to know from him was, how's his relationship with Mike Leach?
You know, Mike and I have a great relationship. I think that at the Pac-12 media days, we had an opportunity for me to apologize to him face-to-face, and then we proceeded to go into the wee hours of the night
and
have a conversation not only about what happened there, but moved on and talked about a number of things. And I think Mike and I are fine. Sometimes you do things that you're not very proud of, and in the heat of the moment, I misspoke. But I'm not very proud of that. But in the grand scheme of things, I think Mike and I are fine. And that's really what counts.
All right. Well, you know what it's like to play against a Mike Leach offense. In fact, your team obviously won a year ago. I make reference to that final score of 62-38. So Oregon won handedly. But you had said this earlier to me today. You said, hey, playing in Pullman, that can be a scary, scary thing for a football team. What did you mean by that?
I always think it's tough to play in Pullman because their fans are real close to the action. They get into your players' heads, or they try to early. In fact, there's numerous times we have to tell our players to not pay attention to what's going on because there's a lot of things being said that are not very nice. But more importantly, that's a tough atmosphere at times. And if they get off, if Washington State gets off to a fast start, that game will become very, very difficult. If you don't, you go up and do your job and put them away early, then the fans are out of it, and it will be fairly easy. But I don't anticipate this Saturday. I think Washington State, with their high-powered offense, is going to throw the ball over the park. They have good receivers. Connor Holliday's throwing for 500 yards a game. I anticipate a tough game for Oregon's defense against Washington State's offense. But Washington State's going to have to get on the field and slow down Marcus Mariota and that offense for it to be a competitive game.
From a defensive coordinator standpoint, and this was your job, and now it's Don Pelham's job to figure this out, but knowing that Mike Leach is not exactly the guy that likes to run the football, scheme-wise, how does it change your preparation?
Well, we're going to rush we're going to rush that quarterback and put pressure on Connor Holliday, and then you got to change up your coverages. You can't give him the same look and the same coverage throughout that game unless it's really working for you, obviously, because he's very good at the passing game, and he'll attack that coverage if he sees it all the time. So you got to disguise your coverage. You got to rush the quarterback from various different ways with different guys coming or secondary guys coming, and you got to play tight coverage and change it up.
This has popped up numerous times over these last couple weeks now as we're staring down week number four in the college football season. The idea, and Oregon right now is the second best team in the country, not even in the Pac-12, just in the country. That's their ranking. After week two, people said, hey, they've shown now that they're the class of the Pac-12, and that's because of that win against Michigan State. Coach Neuheisel was actually sitting where you were after that matchup, and I said to Rick, I was like, does that surprise you that they're saying that they're by far the class of the Pac-12, considering at that point USC had just gone to Stanford and won? Based off of what we saw this past weekend, in your mind, is Oregon clearly the best team in the conference?
You hate to do this, but after 3 weeks, yes.
Yeah.
I think they've been the most consistent team. They've won every game by 24-plus points. Other teams that I think are good, Stanford, UCLA, Arizona, can't name them all, USC, you know, have had their ups and downs. But Oregon has clearly dominated all three of their opponents and have won by 24-plus games, one game by as much as 50. So, yes, I think that right now after 3 weeks, they're the class of the league.
Coach, before we let you get going, before the season started, you were on one of our first shows on Football Weekly, which you can catch Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific, multiple re-airs. Not to mention you've now joined us in studio on a couple Saturdays as well. So you know what the environment is like. I remember asking you on air, hey, do you miss being on the side? Do you miss being around the team? And you said, absolutely not. Now we're a couple weeks in here. Has the answer changed?
Well, I miss the strategy, the X's and O's.
Okay.
You know, that chess game that you play on a weekly basis and then particularly on Saturdays. I have to say I miss that, and I really miss the kids because that's what's kept me young. And you recruit those guys, you get in their homes, you get real close to them for 5 years. I love those young men. But I miss the chess game.
Okay. Well, we love the fact that you're here. And I don't know if you could take solace in this, but I'm not as young as some of your players were, but I am a young guy. So as long as you keep hanging out with us, hopefully I can sort of bridge the gap in this new career of yours.
I got a chance. I'm learning some things.
So are we. But, Coach, appreciate you stopping by with us here on the podcast.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, it is good to know that Nick is still a fan of his retirement, at least
Loves his golf.
Still able
loves
to get on
golf watching
his
ball. And you know what, Mikey? I think he likes coming here and hanging out with us.
Oh, my Lord. I
love it when he comes to town.
He is great. He really is. He's one of the good guys. People always ask me about Nick Gagliotti and say, what kind of guy is he? He truly is one of the best. You know, some guys, they come in and they fit in right away. And I just don't mean here at the Pac-12 Networks, just in any group setting. Nick is one of those guys who has found a way to fit in very quickly. He is great to have around studio. But as he mentioned, you know, you can expect Mike Leach to do what Mike Leach does. It doesn't really matter who he's going to be playing. He's just going to be launching. 89 pass attempts is what Connor Halliday threw for, over 550 yards. Nick was not through. You can still see it, by the way.
Three games my senior year to throw 89 passes. Three games.
Times have changed. You know, Mike Leach. It's one of those deals. But if I said to you, hey, what's the one thing that would scare you about, you know, Coach was just talking about Pullman and what it's like to play there. But let's just say if it was neutral, you're just matching up against Washington State. What's your concern if you're the head coach for on paper, a superior team? Bottom line is Oregon's the number two team in the country.
Right. Well, Don Pelham has got his hands full because as the defensive coordinator for the Oregon Ducks, because you have a gifted receiving squad. There are a number of guys playing for Washington State, whether it's Vince Maley or River Craycraft or you name it. I mean, there are so many. Is it Dom Williams?
Yeah.
Dom Williams.
Yeah, the big target.
There are so many guys.
Isaiah Myers
had 11 catches last week.
Over 200 yards has been added to the Blitnikoff watch list.
And it goes on. It's deeper than that. So, to me, when you're lining up against them, you have to – it's like tennis. You have to hold serve.
Yeah.
Oregon's offense is going to have to go down and be consistent and score. And even though they're the Rafi Nadal – of the tennis world in terms of the top, or Djokovic or Federer, right? They're at the top of the game.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care how far down you go. That guy can play tennis too. And if he gets a hot serve and can hold serve, basically scoring every drive, which we have all seen happen, especially now think back about Tony Lippett against that Oregon defense and that secondary. And Dior Mathis, you know, looked like he was getting shoved around by a big target like Lippett from Michigan State. He had 11 catches for 130-some-odd yards in that ball game. You got four or five guys like that for Washington State. So, to me, the pressure is on the Oregon defense. And if I'm Don Pelham, I'm going to take some chances. I'm not going to lay back and just play bend and don't break. I'm going to take some chances because if I cancel some series, my offense is such, with Marcus Mariota and company, that I'm going to get that 2 and 3 touchdown lead. And when I get that, that's when I demoralize the opponent. It's not going to slow him down. Doesn't mean he's going to stop throwing, as Nick Gagliotti found out last year. But it does mean that you're going to get the win.
You a big tennis guy?
You know, I used to be. Yeah. In the old days when it was Borg and McEnroe and all those guys. Jimmy Connors is an old UCLA guy. When that was going on, the American scene in tennis. I played golf with Marty Fish. He was Yeah, he's a good buddy. It's hard to be as excited about it. It's kind of like the world of soccer. You have to embrace the game because there's really not as much to root for in this country as there is abroad.
It's a shame because it's American tennis has sort of taken it. You know, they were hoping Andy Roddick would be that guy after Sampras and Agassi.
I played golf with Andy.
How is he a good dude?
He's a great guy.
It's funny because you see him on TV, and I remember going to the U.S. I used to cover the U.S. Yeah. Open year in and year out.
And he's a sports fan. He's a sports fan. He comes over and you know, he'll talk football and he'll say, hey, and he's kind of getting into the mindset of what was going on there, which is deeper than most fans when they come over. Hey, I love that catch. I love that throw. He was into the psychology of what that was in. Yeah, both he and Marty are great guys.
Were you an Agassi or a Sampras guy?
Sampras. Sampras is a member of the club, too. I play with Pete. Pete's more off to himself. He wants to go hit balls by himself.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
He's a good guy, but he's not wanting to hang out like the other guys.
Do you remember those? I was a kid, and I still vividly remember the commercials with Agassi and Sampras when Nike was doing like. And as a kid, I played in high school. I played growing up a little bit, and my buddy who I used to play with. We'd all always pretend like, hey, who are you? And I'd always have to be Sampras. And he always wanted to be Agassi. You can be Agassi. That's fine. I want to be the machine that just wins.
Well, you need to come hang out. That would be
fantastic. All right. Before we even move on to the review, by the way, which is still coming up, we have the newest edition of Gridiron Lullaby.
It's time for Rick Neuheisel's Gridiron Lullaby.
We've heard the stories of a tryout with the Green Bay Packers, a trip to Japan. There was another story of Rick being in the touchdown room, and that one was a true one, and his son Jerry Neuheisel coming up huge. The latest installment, though, of Gridiron Lullaby, Rick, what can you entertain us with?
Well, you know, watching my son the other night, It dawned on me that this is such a circle of life deal.
Because yes.
It wasn't so long ago that I was a freshman at UCLA, 1979. Yeah, I remember coming in there. There were guys on the team with full beards. I'm going, and if you watched the game the other night, I think everybody in the touchdown room, I think Curtis said, God, he looks so young.
Yeah.
And that's how I looked, you know, when I was that age. And I'm sitting there going, I remember my freshman year, 1979, and I was on the scout team. I wasn't on the team. But in 1979, you could not redshirt. There was a rule. The NCAA didn't let freshmen redshirt. And so I was eligible to be on the team. And so because it was a non-conference game, the numbers, you could travel more players on a non-conference game than in a conference game, I got to get on and go on the trip to play Wisconsin. Okay, and I'm so excited. My mother and father are from there. They both went to the University of Wisconsin. I was born in Madison General, there in Madison, Wisconsin, while my dad was in law school back in 1961. I was born, and so this is a treat. My folks are excited. They're calling their fraternity brothers and their sorority sisters. Hey, Rick's coming to Madison. He's going to be on the team. I'm wearing number 20. I still can't get a quarterback number because I'm still down on the depth chart. So we get there, and as always the case, you have this itinerary of things that you have to be at. And on Saturday morning, you have a team breakfast, and then you have some time, then you have team meetings. Well, different time zone, so I'm so excited. My roommate was a guy named Paul Bergman, who ended up being the tight end my fifth year when we ended up playing in the Rose Bowl at the end of my career. But we're both true freshmen right now. Paul Bergman, for those who are really wanting to wax back, went to Granada Hills, and he was John Elway's number one receiver in high school. So he and I are roommates. We go to breakfast. We're like the first guys there. We have our pancakes. We go back to the room, and now we're just killing time. And as we're killing time, we both fall asleep. We just wet
game
behind
ready,
the ears.
Baby. Yeah.
We fall asleep. I wake up, and you know that nervous feeling when you're like, you know that you've overslept?
Oh, yeah.
That horrible feeling.
Yeah.
And I'm going, Paul, get up. And I'm looking at my watch, and we've missed the meeting, and the buses are, like, leaving as we speak. And he looks at me and goes, we can't go down there now. They'll know we're late. I said, we have to go now. We go sprinting down there, and we're going to take
our— What's your other option, by the way, if you don't go?
We're going to try to go to the game, you know, in a roundabout sort of way and see if we can get there, right? So we get to the lobby, and there's an associate athletic director there going, you've missed the buses, just looking at us like, you idiots, you've missed the buses. He goes, you're going to have to wait and go on our bus with all the fans. I said, no way. And I go, Paul, come with me. We went outside, and I flagged a car down in the middle of Madison. And I stopped these two guys, Bernie and Pete. Bernie and Pete. And they looked at as Midwestern. If they weren't in a polka band, they should have been, okay? They looked at Midwestern. They oofta. They had all the Norwegian sayings because I'd heard all these from my mom. And I said, we need a ride to Camp Randall. He goes, we're going to the game right now. So Paul is freaking out. How do we know these guys? I go, just shut up and get in the car. And we get in the car, this old Oldsmobile, and got taken to Camp Randall. We go slipping in to the locker room, going around. There's guys, you can't go in there. We're players. Oh, okay. So, because we got our bags over our back, had our travel sweatsuit. And we get into the locker room, and we walk to our lockers, and no one says a thing. They never
knew
we didn't make the deal. I'm looking at Paul. He's like going, we got to go tell Coach. I go, say
nothing. Are you kidding me?
Say nothing. If they know, they'll tell us we'll throw up later. They'll make us run till we throw up later. But say nothing. We actually made it.
Pulled it off. What was the exchange in the car? Like, did the guys...
So you fellas on the band? you fellas on the
team? They wanted you to play with them.
Oh, it was... I go, can you step on it just a little bit? And he goes, are you in a hurry, huh? Yeah, kind of in a hurry.
Why wouldn't you go on the bus with the fans at that point?
Because I was going to have to wait another 15 minutes. That bus wasn't going to leave.
So you knew that
we have a chance to get there and not get caught.
Rick, you haven't changed one bit. Right now, you have not changed one bit. Because if that was me, I would have been on the team bus, or with the fans, rather.
No,
I got there, head down.
I went out and literally put my hand up and stopped traffic.
Oh, man. It is Madison. How many cars were out there at that point?
It's a big city.
I've never been.
Madtown is a great college town. It was game day.
So there's a buzz. There's
just
a feel.
Couple of fellas, you know. Hey, we'll give you a ride, Sonny.
Just, I can.
Bernie. I'll never forget Bernie. Bernie was my man that day.
I can assure anyone who's listening, or everyone who is listening right now, Rick has not changed one bit. That is a Coach Neuheisel move to the nth degree. At the end of every show, we have been asking people to send in their reviews. Rate us on iTunes. Of course, I always say give the gift of entertainment to
your friends. Rate Mike. Be easy on me.
It is the newest feature, or it's the newest feature that we have this year on the podcast.
Give the gift of entertainment. Review us.
Rick, you know, the new little voiceover there. Are you a fan? Do you like the female voice? We had to mix it up a little bit because the Gridiron Lullaby has got that, you know, that raspy, deep country
Welcome
thing going.
Gridiron Lullaby.
This one, you know, we wanted to go with the more feminine route. Are you happy with the selection there?
I just work here, Mike. I just work here. I'm good with whatever the Pac-12 decides is the appropriate way to approach our business.
Look at you being
multiple rear.
Look at you being the company guy. We have been asking you to rate us on iTunes, and we would take the wittiest review of the week and share it with everyone. Big Rob 22 gave us 5 stars, so I'm always a huge fan of that. I love listening to the Odd Couple rip on each other every week. They still give us awesome analysis. Keep them coming. I'll take that. How do you feel about being referred to as the Odd Couple?
None. That's one of my favorite shows. You're too young to remember the old Odd Couple. Jack Klugman and Tony Randall. Can two men live together without driving each other crazy?
Is that what
the...
Oh, I know the theme. Yeah. Is it real? It was two dudes living together?
Yeah. They both got divorced because one was this total slob, which would be me. One was this total nerd, just, you know, paranoid guy that had to have everything in perfect place. That
little
would be you.
little OCD.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess that I do skew probably more to that side than
one last thing
before we wrap things up. Not only do we appreciate everyone downloading us, but Mackenzie holding it down for us, Candace Coutts, who is one of our leaders here at the Pac-12.
One of the stars. She's interviewing somewhere right now.
That's what she says.
Someone's
she's
trying
sick.
To steal her away. Mark she my words.
She says that she's sick, but yeah, we do wish her nothing.
She's got the need more money blues.
I hope to God that is not accurate, but we do hope that she feels better. But Mackenzie, fantastic job as always. There was
Mac,
talk of us not even doing
who's
it.
Who's better than you, Mac?
No
way
one.
To go.
Nobody. Once again, thank you, of course, for downloading us on iTunes. Continue to rate us. Five stars for the odd couple.